This episode of Speakers of Heidelin is made possible by our generous patrons. Special thanks to our supreme and master speakers, Omega Cat Comet, Erisu Yamakawa, Alex Franco AV, Wineboat Brood, Aurora Templeton, Psyche, Azuta Starbreeze, Cletus Oreo, Nina Grimstarter, Lily Black, Bob CZ, Mictor Rabentau, Anathos Moonscar, Pamela Isley, Elenreal Maximus, Codrith Novelist, Mira Miri, Celestau Notrell, Lazy Boy, Luke Osborne, Pandalu, Storm Arrow, Tex, Kylin, Arthur Law, Barry Danderard, Cypup, Spencer Christmas, Noy Fafnir, Celine DeLune, Edwin, Webster Wolf, Severa, Circa Barrakeel, AJ Brainswords, and Casran, Ventos Tia, Ryark Forbear, Leighton the House, Tony, Arcadia Lunashine, Umbral Wind, Framboise Sakuro, Bergie, Fudge, and Cephiel. Support the show and become a patron today at patreon.com/speakersxiv. Thank you.
Speakers of Heidelin.
Good evening, Aorcians. Welcome to Speakers of Heidelin, episode 391. I'm Lakeel Bravestone, and I'm joined today by Giri Whiston, Mela Vanadar, and Rolodes.
Hello.
It is March 2nd, 2024, and today we are going to cover a Backstage Investigators interview. I bet you forgot that place existed. Not Backstage Investigators, but the dev blog. What's it? It's called... Mm-hmm.
It's called The Official Blog now.
The Official Blog. That's the new fancy name for it. And also, we'll be talking about the tabletop RPG. There's some stuff, new stuff about that that's been released. And we'll be reading your Mogmail, speakersxiv.com/Mogmail. Stay tuned for the post show. We'll be answering questions from the Syndicate and Pokemon. Now, there's something that we talked about last stream, a couple of streams ago now. No, it might have been last stream. I don't remember. Time. Where we were considering... It's our 10th anniversary this year.
Mm.
There, for those that remember the post show, when it started, it essentially had a fan fiction that we read through that we stopped at some point during a very infamous poker scene. Because it was literally just them playing poker. And we got so bored, we were like, you know what? That's quite enough of that. And then we stopped. We might return. That's what we're just throwing it out there now. That maybe there will be a return, a comeback for that horrible, or I shouldn't say horrible. The
overwrought.
Right, that word, fan fiction. That's
oh my
yeah. Which Rollo? I think that was even that was before your time. Even
that was you stopped when I joined. Essentially,
you're right? Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't.
We didn't think you'd be able to pull off the characters as authentic.
Well, oh god, you're right. Did we give them voice? Oh yeah, I sounded like Mickey Mouse.
We gave them voices.
They all had voices.
Oh good lord.
Yeah. We read it in the most.
Remember, that's where Spassilive Joy came.
Oh, that's true. Some really old memes. So look forward to that in the future, maybe. So just so you know. All right, that's it. Let's jump into it. It's time for recent events. Yes, and like I teased before, we're gonna talk about it. The tabletop RPG, which released... it hasn't released yet.
No, there was a playtest.
Yeah, there was a playtest. Mm-hmm. Some of the big game news outlets have spilled the beans, including Famitsu, 4Gamer, and gamer.ne.jp. Shout out.
What does the NE stand for?
Netherlands. It's the Dutch-Japanese gaming press.
Oh.
No, I don't know, actually. I don't know what the NE is for. So I guess I'll read this. This is from the I believe this is from the subreddit, so it's like bullet points from these three publications. So I'll read
this has been compiled by the user OMGWTFHacks_.
Wow.
That's a great name.
Bringing me back.
That's nostalgic. Okay, so here we go. I'll read the bullet points. I guess we'll discuss as we go down the list. So gameplay outside of combat looks to be standard roleplay with ability checks, talking to NPCs and such. So, yeah.
That's kind of sad. I wish it'd be a bit more.
What would it be more Final Fantasy 14 flavored?
You can incorporate into the role playing part more mechanical incentives aside from just kind of the standard roll for speech or whatever stat they want to use, you know. But it's always kind of sad when they just kind of leave the role playing to just do whatever you want and maybe roll sometimes, you know. There's no mechanical parts of it.
It makes it more free, though. Mm-hmm. If it was more mechanical, there would be dialogue options, essentially, and the DM would say, which of these dialogue options do you want to say? And it'd be more formulaic then.
Not forcing you into rigid binaries and options, but just more encouraging the role play kind of, you know, backgrounds, sticking to your character's background personalities. Mm-hmm. There's other games that they give you bonuses or nice little treats when you play into the character, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
maybe a form of inspiration, but maybe these people aren't super deep into D&D style. They may be more into just generic board games, and maybe they've just picked it up like that.
I mean, this is a Final Fantasy 14 tabletop RPG, so I don't know how deep people are into RPG, tabletop RPGs necessarily. So they kind of want this might be just a entry level style. Yeah. That's what they're going for. So
it'll have probably a storyline or two that the DM can guide you through, and you know, they should be encouraging you to play your character as, in character as much as possible anyway.
Yeah.
It's definitely sounding like you just kind of play with the module that they have or something like that. At least for now.
I don't know how many
could change.
Yeah, there's a certain number of pre-made campaigns. I don't know how many there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's that. Attack rolls are checked against physical or magic defense, AC. Attacks will always hit. But rolling plus bonus above defense is a direct hit and has additional effects. Just more damage?
That's good,
cool.
Though.
Yeah. That's using actual fantasy mechanics in a different way.
Yes.
Rolling a bunch of dice and not hitting for a while fucking blows.
Yeah.
So degrees of failure and success is a much more enjoyable system, personally, I would say. So I'm glad they're going with that.
Yeah.
It's nice also that they have physical and magical as presumably separate ACs, so if you attack with magic against someone who's very easy to hit with magic, then you're gonna hit quite a lot.
Yeah,
I gotta wonder though, do you think the games would be more job based, or is the gear gonna come more into play as in a more traditional kind of tabletop, where your gear matters because your gear has magical effects or whatever, or as opposed to how 14 does it in the real game, where it's just it's more your job where you get everything from, and that your armor is just stats essentially.
I think the jobs are going to be where everything comes from. To be honest, Roderick, it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't even much to the gearing system. Mm-hmm. You may just have set job gear, and when you level up, your stats just increase.
I'm pretty sure there's only supposed to be four jobs in the base version of the 14.
Oh my god!
RPG. I think they're White Mage, Black Mage, Dragoon, and Warrior or Paladin. But
Warrior.
Yeah.
Do you got to buy the Heavensward inspection to get the jobs?
Inspection.
Inspection.
Inspection. I think you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they've set themselves up perfectly for expansions if it's popular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Nat 20s are critical hits, which double your damage.
What's a nat 20, Lakeel?
A natural 20. Yeah, as you can find in nature.
Some people might not.
What's that mean?
Some people might not know what that means, though.
Might not.
When you roll a d20 as a 20-sided dice, and it lands on a 20.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's the highest.
Sorry, some of you who are watching might not actually know what any of this is.
Similarly.
Yeah, that's what I know what you're talking about, but there are some people that would listen to what you're saying and have no idea what is being spoken of right
now. You roll a 20-sided die, it hits 20. You get a critical hit. There you go. Nat 20s are critical hits, which double your damage or healing. There are no critical misses, which is a natural one. If you roll a one, that's a critical miss normally. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't exist here. How do we feel about that? No critical
miss. I like that.
It looks like...
I like that you can't miss.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like how it's working is kind of like usual tabletop fare, where it's D20 plus your ability score modifier. So it's going to be, you know, D20 plus whatever, 5 strength or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is a little boring, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be baby's first tabletop RPG. You can't expect it to be
You can roll 3 dice instead of 1. It's better.
There are some ways in... I mean... For real, I know what you mean, Rollo, in some respects. Like, the idea of 20 being the best roll when there's an equal chance of rolling it to every other dice is... I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rather than the idea of rolling 3 lucky dice to get the critical hit. I understand it.
Listen, we need a break from the shackles of the D20. We are chained by it and held back so much. Uh-huh. Please. We got better maths now. We got better dice.
Okay.
I'm begging you.
Yeah.
I think that I don't know how they're going to expand on this game. I think having no critical miss is not always a good idea. You know, critical hit and miss is required for situations where you would otherwise never fail. It's designed for instances where all characters have a chance to fail and succeed no matter what. You can be a character with 3 intelligence, like dribbling your way through the world, but there's still that small chance that you hit the 20 and you just succeed on whatever the thing is. And that's very important for D&D. But also, on the other hand, you could be, you know, the henchest barbarian, Conan the Barbarian himself, but there's a chance you can fail. I think the ability to fail and succeed against all odds is what makes, you know, the role-playing aspect of D&D exciting. So I don't know about the nat ones not being in.
Yeah. They've gone with no critical misses. We'll see how that goes.
I think they'll just have a lot of health enemies, like, as in, like, since everyone's going to be hitting, just give them more, like, effective health, and that's more the challenge. Is not landing the hits, is doing as much damage as you can. It's a DPS race, just like 14 is.
It has to be different, so.
Yes. Spells cost MP, which regenerates at 2 MP per turn.
Yeah.
This is one of the most interesting things they're doing.
Yeah.
I hate spell slots. I hate that kind of shit. Mm. It sucks. What do you mean you're too tired to cast a spell?
Yeah. What are spell slots, Rollo?
Spell slots is like, I don't know, tickets you can use to fucking cast your spells in D&D. And you have a set amount per day. I think it sucks because, like, you're a fucking wizard, you know? Like, you run out of magic? What do you mean? You're a wizard!
You need to,
the only thing you do is magic! Tired?
I have to rest. Like,
yeah, he's tired, Rollo. His brain is tired.
Yeah.
And they don't even come back with a short rest. You gotta do
short rest and long rest. Long rest.
I think spell slots are a pretty good system, but I like that they're doing something new. And as chat brings up, I think this is going to be a nightmare to keep track of.
Yes.
But, I think this game is going to be
a
lot more popular on, like, virtual tabletops, where it does all the math and tracking.
Oh,
for
if this came out as, like, a you know, its own little game, a little multiplayer game, it would be very nice.
Yeah. I think I'm going to, like, it whenever it becomes available, or maybe someone makes an extension, I think I'd prefer to do this as a virtual tabletop.
Yeah.
I think tracking a ton of shit is kind of the worst part of
two MPs per turn. It's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah. If that happens, though, I think we need to do a campaign on it.
100%.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
But the fact that they cost MPs, it's a good way of breaking the mold.
Yeah.
I think spellcasters should be casting spells constantly. Like, that's their thing. They don't run as spells and hit you with a stick. What? No, come
on. I agree with you in principle, because non-spellcasters can endlessly do their attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is, theoretically, although not in practice because there are OP builds, but theoretically, an archer is going to do, like, 10 damage with a bow. Mm. But a wizard can do, like, 50 damage with one spell.
That's true.
Like, they're supposed to be able to do overwhelming magic. Yeah. And, like, some of the spells in, like, 9th level spells in D&D are just, fail this check and you will die.
Yeah.
It's pretty much disintegrate.
Yeah.
Well, even like power word kill and power word stun. Yeah. Just like,
well, I mean, I think it'll be easy to balance around just having like, you can do, you can have a burst. You can literally have a burst window, you know, as spellcasters, where like you can dump your stuff at a certain amount of time in the fight, you know, and then later on it kind of comes back and you can, you know, rinse and repeat that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing though, it has Black Mage in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they going to have ice phase where they'll get MP that quickly?
I am.
Or are they going to have to use spells and then just do nothing for a while it regens?
I'm so curious how they're going to adapt some of these jobs.
Exactly.
From, like, the game, too, because it's not. No way is it going to be one to one in so many instances. You got to be really creative.
I'm so intrigued.
So I'm excited to see how that turns out.
The hardest jobs are going to be White Mage and Black Mage, potentially.
Yeah,
you kill you
just having to figure out how how it depends. Like, what if heal costs like 5 MP and you only get 20 MP or something, and it's two? But like,
well, so this is the second part, which is very important. All HP and MP regenerates to max outside of combat. No rest required.
That's good.
That's fine.
Good.
So you always enter a battle with all stats full. So that's,
I think, like, it's like actual 14.
Yeah.
I like
if,
that.
I think if you want to make combat like longer, then you have like multiple, you know, fights that take not just having to end a fight, start another one with less resources, end a fight, like just make the fight like that instead of having to, you know, do the rest in between.
Mm-hmm.
But the MP costs like aren't that bad, actually. It's, so it's 2 per turn you get back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like Medica and Cure 2 are both 2 MP. And the White Mage has 5 MP to start. I don't know how that changes. So that's like
5 MP to start.
Yeah, they have 5, at least on this character sheet, which is, you know, subject to change, of course. So all of this, all the numbers are. I wouldn't look into the numbers too much. But yeah, they have 5 MP, and it looks like skills usually cost like 2.
Everything's costing very little. I mean, yeah.
So you're going to be casting spells. How it should be.
Yeah.
I am. But then again, also... does it? Oh no, it'll talk through the actions, won't it? Because like you've got to think about how much you can do on a turn.
Yeah,
it looks like you can burn like 3 MP per turn. At least on White Mage, it looks like you can do the full action of like a heal, cure 2 MP, and then you can do your sub action as arrow, which is 1 MP, so that's 3. So you're still kind of in a deficit, you know, as if you're always using a sub action.
Hmm. Okay.
So I think that'll work. Oh my god, I just saw it's a dot too. You have to keep track of fucking dots and TTR. It's a virtual tabletop game. It's a virtual tabletop game. It's the only way to play.
Blackmage seems to have Blizzard and Blizzard 2, and then Fire 2, Lightning, or Thunder 2.
Oh yeah, they start off with 5 MP as well. So it's, I guess that's the baseline of their starting with. Subject to change.
Yeah.
Bring back TP though.
I wish
you get
this was
tired
in English.
Fight.
Another system to keep track of, TP.
Yeah, you know, spellcaster got MP. It's the time to bring back TP.
I agree with that.
No, it's not.
It's not the time.
You get tired in the fight. Waving that stick around,
no,
you know?
It is heavy. Not the time.
Bring back Goad in the TTRPG.
No.
Brother, may I have some good?
Combat is split into phases and turns. A phase is one battle. For example, a door boss would be one phase. Turns are the same as other tabletop RPGs. Everyone takes a turn in initiative order.
Yeah. Standard stuff, I would say. Initiative.
Yeah.
Phases, I guess they're calling just fights, but sure, whatever.
Yeah. There's no permadeath. Anyone who falls in battle is able to be revived in some way. On party wipe, the phase is reset and you can try again just like in game.
That's very generous, but fair.
That's an interesting way to do it, I'll say, of just like resetting the fight entirely and not having like, I mean, I'm sure you can make a fail state if you wanted to. Like, oh, you lost the fight, you got captured. Now the game continues in a dungeon or something. Or But I think not dying is fine for 14. Like, it's not, it doesn't really portray your characters like that, you know, as being that vulnerable.
Right, that's true.
It's not as if, like, you would ever be going into a fight in a different state anyway because of the fact that MP and HP regenerate after every battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's... It is, you know...
I mean, it's awkward for the role-playing aspect of it.
Exactly, like, you can't lose the game, essentially. There's no, and there's no way of also role-playing out of that situation. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it takes away a huge amount of the most exciting thing in D&D is the idea that your character is not permanent and you want them to live. And when you get down to low HP, you're scared.
Well, yes, but I think, I mean, obviously, this is a tabletop RPG, so the DM can change. I mean,
you
decide what to do. But you can reset. Yeah. And how you decide that happens, you know, RP-wise is up to you.
I'm thinking of this more as like a board game rather than... I mean, it's not like a new role-playing game rule set. It's just like a fun board game.
Yeah.
It's a framework for it, though. I mean, like, once
it
you...
It could be.
But depending how far they go with the leveling
on how it goes later on, and also with expansion and stuff, then it can push into. Mm. But if you treat it as more of like a board game type thing, I think it's probably easier to reconcile just being able to keep doing fights forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always house rules. I'm sure plenty of people will be like, no, we're not fucking resetting. I don't want to put all the pieces back on the board.
Right.
Continue where we left off. You guys are knocked out at the least.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So that's, you know, that's just, that's all in every tabletop.
Yeah. There are main actions, sub actions, and instant reactions.
Okay. You can downgrade actions. That's my biggest gripe with D&D is you can't turn a full action to a bonus action. This thing that's very annoying.
Right.
It is annoying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, there's nothing
clearly
crazy.
They're separated on the character sheet, though.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't understand the screen. So the news article has pictures of the character sheets.
Yes.
Just for to know that we're looking at them. And, like, some of them, a lot of them are grayed out.
Because they weren't allowed to use them for this demo.
Oh, okay. So it's just put in. Yeah. So it's like, are they hoping that they'll light up when you can use them somehow? Like
it's just the, you know, the.
So they were only able to use certain sets of the skill. That doesn't really make much sense. I don't like that.
I mean, it might just be low level stuff too. You know, like as in higher level.
The final points on this say that they weren't allowed to use them.
Yeah. 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 Okay, so each turn a player can move and perform one action and one sub-action. That's pretty
standard.
Is movement separate from actions? I hope it is. I don't like a shared pool with actions. I think that's annoying.
Can move and perform one action and one sub-action.
Oh yeah, can move and perform one action.
Okay, that's good.
Performing a combo action allows you to use a bonus ability that turn.
Combo. Sorry, you have to actually. You got to do your rotation. Your rotation.
The warrior, if you look at the warrior sheet, they have like the second action pops off from it, and it's not like a little arrow down to it to show that it's part of the.
I missed Armor Crush. I dropped Hutan. I'm sorry. In the CTRP, I gotta recast Hutan.
Yeah.
How many bonus actions is that for each mutra?
In this test play session, players were not able to use the darkened actions on the character sheets. Mm-hmm. So there's not much info on sub actions or instants. So, Most
but they still have the stuff written out for, which is weird. You think they would put on there?
Yeah.
I don't. It's an odd print app.
Yeah. Most sub actions and instants have limited uses per face.
So that's per battle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Down it. The burst windows, they're real.
Mm.
Yeah, line up everything.
Yeah.
Most sub actions have limited use. What, like? Because on the Warriors one of them's Rampart, which I would imagine has quite a lot of use during a fight, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you'd be able to do one per turn, you'd think, like, bonus actions in D&D have a lot of use in combat.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be using them for even situational things like disengaging or whatever.
Yeah, the action economy, you know. Maximize your actions.
Are they just like adding charges, like in game, like we're using in game? You can only use it 3 times. There are limit breaks, but they were not available in this play session. Gamer.ne.jp mentions that the GM may activate the Echo at their discretion for limit breaks, but there's no info beyond that.
Listen.
What do you mean activate the Echo?
Not here. You're not getting no buffs. We believe in Dice Bushido.
Exactly.
If you fuck up some rolls and you're losing, you are losing. The DM is not coming to rescue you.
Yeah. There you go. That's the
an interesting one. So the picture for the on the shop for the TTRPG has 3 character sheets per class.
Yeah,
and I'm assuming that's level based potentially. So yeah, there's 3 jumps probably in level you can do.
Yeah,
and the sheets they've got here are for level 30s.
Well, yeah,
with 5 MP and 35 health for the warrior.
Well, I think just
quite
we have
minimal
to.
Stat. I assume it's all it's all just like,
all this. This is subject to change. This, you know,
it's a very high level to jump. Right?
Yeah,
I see the one picture. I think it's funny that. There's an AoE marker.
Yeah, I was just looking at that.
You can play it. Like, it's a group AoE, like a stack. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's funny.
Like, what do you do? Like, I'm the DM. There's a stack marker on
you.
Move or your friend's going to die.
A stack marker appears.
I guess
so. 4 orange arrows.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
Sorry, go.
I'm just going to say, I like the implication that the arenas are all squares still.
Yeah.
Just like in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's no hexagons here, sadly.
Right.
We're square boys.
Yeah.
I'm excited, though. I mean, there's this thing in any, like, tabletop adaptation of, like, you know, popular media or show or video game or whatever, where, like, you have to ask the question, is it just going to be D&D? Because, like, 9 times out of 10, they're like, we're making our own tabletop. And it's like, you just made D&D 5e or 4e. Like, what?
Yeah.
I don't want that. I don't want the skin of, you know, something else. So, but it does at least seem like they are trying some different stuff. Not entirely. They're still, I mean, D&D is popular. So, you know, you gotta go with it. But it at least seems like they're not burdened by it as much and are trying some stuff. So it's piqued my interest.
It's a cool adaptation.
I mean,
I'm very interested to see where it goes. I think this, you know, they didn't do a lot with some of the other little mini game things they made, like that card game. I think that might have had 1 expansion. Mm. But, like, this could go far. They don't have to follow Heavensward, Storm, blah, 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 but they could do, like, Final Fantasy XIV, Gelmoran, Dive or whatever, and it's like they go into Gelmora and it adds in like 3 new jobs you can play, a whole new adventure. And
Lakeel, you can make the Gelmora expansion pack yourself.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You can use a campaign.
You'll use it to make your own campaigns,
which
is nice. But I do like the idea of them doing official, you know, extra boxes.
It'd be nice to explore some stuff. And I'm interested because it sounds like the player character in this game are warriors of light or something. So, like, what is the context of this world? Like, are you part of the Scions? Are you, like, just the story progressing with 4 characters, I think, or however many, is neat. You know, it's a novel concept. So, I want to fight some cubists with their cute little stands, little acrylic stands. I think they're from the Scary Next Door, those acrylic stands. Or no, they came with a set, never mind.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
You only get tokens in the actual box, I think. I don't think you get anything that fancy.
No, because you got to pay up for that. You got to pay up for that. Yeah, for that real acrylic.
I'll just print out a piece of paper and put on a paperclip.
No, you can't do that, Rollo.
Did you see some of the edits too that they have? They have Ifrit as a big stand.
Oh,
Weirdly, they also have the mini Aetherite that was like on the Square Enix store, unrelated. Just the Aetherite lamp. Remember that from last year?
I wish. Yeah, I wanted that.
It's neat. It'll be look forward to it. It might be something fun to try it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. No date obviously on this yet because that was a playtest, but they'll make their adjustments, I guess, and to be announced when this will be out.
Yeah. Mm. Number of players 3 to 5, which sounds insane, but it's recommended for 5.
You said 5? Oh, okay. That's weird. Yeah. I thought it was 4.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted the DM.
4 as well.
The DM.
Who's going to DM for us?
Yeah.
But that's the crazy part. Oh, yeah. So the lowest number of people is the DM plus 2. That sounds like shit. You obviously don't want to be the 2 DPS, okay. Are you?
Okay. Please look forward to the tabletop RPG whenever it comes out.
With 4 characters and a GM, guys. That's how it's meant to be played.
Yeah.
Roll to grab Mela by the collar and shake him a little bit.
There's no grabs in Final Fantasy.
There's no grabs?
Okay, we have to move on. This one's weird. There's a lodestone post that is kind of hidden away. If you
in the notices section, tab.
Notices tab on the lodestone. We've come across a baffling post, and I'll just read it, and you'll understand. A ceremony of eternal bonding reservation restrictions. Maintenance may cause your reserved ceremony of eternal bonding to be cancelled, requiring reservation for another date. We ask that you please consider the information below before making your ceremony of eternal bonding reservation. So already, this is very strange. And then it just says, with like a sub-headline, possible maintenance sometime on February 27th, 2024, between 4 and 11 GMT. Now, the time of day is always the same. And then sometime on February 28th, 29th, and then sometime on March 5th, March 6th, March 7th, then we jump March 12th, 13th, or 14th.
What in the goddamn is this?
What?
Please consider the information below before you make your reservation. And then it says, which is the best part, subject to change. So not only is this vague as fuck, it can change as well. Like, what does that mean? Emergency maintenance may occur outside of the time listed above.
It could be any time, guys.
We know it's not the first of those 3 dates because those have already passed, and you might know this. We might have a proper announcement out this by the time this podcast goes out.
Maybe it makes
on
sense
on YouTube. Yeah, but who knows?
But because below there it says confirmed maintenance, none.
Please, what's going on at Square Enix right now? Like what? Hello?
Please reschedule if your reserved ceremony of eternal bonding overlaps with confirmed maintenance, which, by the, just as a reminder, is none. There are none. Oh, I love it.
It's possibly the times we listed or outside of those times.
At any time, it can happen, but also these.
It could happen at any time at all, but especially during those possible windows.
Oh yeah, I don't know. It's just a funny post. So don't get married between February 27th and March 14th, I guess. Mm-hmm. So
or ever.
We're past
potentially
February, but yeah. Okay, well there you go. That's a little funny aside. Moving on, it is time for Mogman. Sorry, my Google Nest has decided to have a little chat. Shut up.
Oh.
Okay. it's time for Mogmail. This one's from Tigro Blanco from Halicarnassus. Hey speakers, that one bald guy checking in, another one for the count, just finished the VOD of the Into Souls 9 episode of Speakers of Eidolon and was enjoying the meals you were all cooking in regards to Solution 9. I was first not on board with the idea of Allegans or Garleans having anything to do with the area, but as I listened to your conversation, I started cooking a side dish to go along with that theory. You already touched upon the Final Fantasy IX references, including the Terrans and how they were trying to simulate with the Gaian people, as well as the Garleans possibly being without a soul since they can't manipulate ether. That's when it kind of hit me. The area near Solution 9 with the Garlean-style tech? It's called Heritage Found. What was the name of the old man who worked tirelessly for millennia until Terra was able to be revived? Garland, whose name appears to be the basis for Garlemald's / the Garlean Empire, not to mention we have the famous Cid Nan Garlond, which I never understood why his name was spelt as such. With this in mind, what if the reason that Heritage Found looks the way it does and is named the way it is because it's where some Garleans found their lost heritage? Also, the name Heritage Found seems like a wonderful parallel to Paradise Found, which is what Solution 9 seems to be alluding. Anyway, been enjoying you guys since discovering you back in 2020 when I first started playing 14. Take care, and may more bold warriors of light come forth, Tigro. Thank you. Right, yeah, I mean, it's a good point.
I like this theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good addition.
Yeah, Garland.
It is an unusual name for an area.
It is, Heritage
Although it
Found.
Doesn't necessarily fall in line with other naming conventions that Garleans may do, but I suppose maybe if it was a splinter group, they were like, wow, look what we found. Like, yeah. We understand our purpose or whatever.
All right. Well, I do. I do like the Garlean soul, yes. Soulless being thing. Like the man, like they're mannequins. They spelled that really funny way. I like that. I think that should.
Oh,
be
Oh yeah.
And I subscribe.
Mannequin Skywalker.
Yeah. I do enjoy. I enjoy the kind of like a lost nation kind of like finding its dark origins, you know? You're like, oh my God, we suck. We're fucking built to be losers. But then they find a new purpose with, you know, is what I would hope. Not just like, damn, we suck.
So they're just like Loprits, except they never thought that they were losers, but they did lose their purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the only issue I'd have with that particular, like, series of logic is that, like, I feel like that was a lot more of the theme of Endwalker. It'd be weird if we tread retreading it, because it's a theme in both the Loprit questline and the Omicron questline.
That's always come in threes. That's what they always say. So we got one more story beat to finish like that. And I guess
it would be a bigger reveal for Guardians than unfortunately it was for the Loprits and the Omicron. Yeah. So they just beat it to the punch in terms of ruining that general plot line for the Garleans.
And they're kind of not, like, the Garlean story isn't really over. It's still in this really weird spot. Like, not as in Garlemald the area, but like the people there are still like, well, we got the weird evil Senate dude still, sort of.
Oh, there's lots going on still there.
It's like halfway to whatever they want it to be, you know what I mean?
But it'll be nice because once they find out that they're just husk people, they'll be able to say, well, it doesn't matter what we did then. Like, you know, we did what we did and tried to destroy the whole world because we actually lose the husk people. And then they travel over to Solution 9 and take that over.
Are they like...
I don't really know what they're doing in Solution 9. I don't understand its purpose at all. In all of these theories... The only one that has any, like, ability for people to exist there really is that it's come from another shard, because there would be people in an arc.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, Guardians finding it, and then what, turning into some weird techno city? I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's doing, and I still don't know if it's destroying the planet Cloud or not.
Okay. FF7
I hope it is.
Out now.
Yeah, out now. Get it and play it now. I mean, we agree though that there is, seems to be a strong possibility that Garland Mold is somewhat tied into this.
The more I look into it, too many bits though.
What do you mean?
Like outside, there's the Varigalian walls.
Yeah.
Inside, it's very future elegant, but also naming wise, it's very ancient.
Yeah, it has everything.
It has all. Oh, I mean, sorry. Heritage Found sounds very like an ancient name.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah. I see that. Yeah, I don't know, but there's definitely. I mean, whatever that stuff is outside that looks Garlean, if that's not Garlean, or related to Garland Mold, I don't know how they're going to explain that. Like, maybe Garland Mold stole that tech. I mean, our Garland Mold is based on Allegan tech, right? So. Garlemald is, or Garlean design is just like advanced or like a newer, like 2.0 Allegan, essentially. So the Allegan and Garlean link might be one and the same.
See, there's also this other fear I have where I feel like putting the Garleans in the new world like that, or Tyrell, or whatever the Solution 9 is, it kind of undermines the Tyrell stuff, you know what I mean? Like, if it's just like, oh yeah, the Neo-Roman Russian dudes are in the secret base, it's like, well, we're coming here for the, you know, the cool new continent stuff, but now we're...
A little bit.
Well, I think it is, yeah, I agree, but I'm pretty it's important to have some sort of link to your existing world as well, so it doesn't feel like you're just like...
Yeah, but why would they?
I mean... We know very little about Northern Tyrell's culture or anything.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they're cowboys.
Well, they have the cowboy land.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but
North Tyrell's also where the Wallachi are, aren't they?
Yeah, but we only know stuff from that from the Blue Mage quest, essentially.
Yeah,
and it's not
but
that
I think they are. They are in the north.
They are. That's where they are.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
This is an aside. I'm so curious what accents they're going to give everybody for all the different races and regions. Like, I just, like, we already got a little bit of a preview with Wuklamon. It's kind of like vaguely Latin American, Puerto Rican, maybe.
Yeah.
But don't worry. Don't worry. There'll be plenty of people that have inexplicable accents, like how there were plenty of people in Thavnir that just spoke with a British accent.
Yeah.
Right. all right, thank you. Next Mogmail coming up. This one's from Chesha Soltiri from Solera.
Yeah, Solera boys.
Great discussion on Solution 9. I wanted to chime in late with an idea that popped into my brain when images were first shown to us. I immediately thought the words about purple leaven were important. And of course, what other summon is there to match that description than Ramu? Ramu doesn't make very much sense for me where the story is going, however. Well, what about the opposing leaven force, Quetzalcoatl? Quetzalcoatl is a thunderbird that is an obvious tie to not only the thunder-aspected city, but also its historical reference to the Mesoamerican Quetzalcoatl. Most stories agree upon Quetzalcoatl being the god of the morning star and being known as the inventor of books, the calendar, and the giver of maize to mankind. The worship of Quetzalcoatl was, in some religions, connected with human sacrifices, while in others opposed to human sacrifices. Interesting. My theory is that this summon/icon/god plays a huge part in the story, and with Solution 9. One catch, though, is that we have already seen Quetzalcoatl in 14 in Academia Anadir. So how does that work? Well, I think they might just rename/combine the entity as...
Raijincha.
Yeah, thank you. Literal translation to Thunder God Bird, a reoccurring enemy in Final Fantasy based on North American mythology of a godlike bird of leaven. I believe that is... that this entity...
Reoccurring?
Powered... Yeah?
Final Fantasy Crisis Cup only.
I believe that this entity powers the city and is used perhaps unwillingly, similar to Azdaya, Or perhaps it's using Levin power to spread tainted lightning aspected ether. Why is the city futuristic? Meh, no idea. Thanks, speakers. Not bold.
Not bold. Quetzalcoatl in 8 and Academia Nita.
14.
Love it. Always
I don't believe that the Quetzalcoatl of 8 invented books.
Because
thing barely looks like anything.
To be perfectly honest with you, it has a melon head. Yeah, wait, had a little melon head.
Alshiva is also not the correct. Alshiva is also not the correct gender. Trying to make true connections.
I just thought it was funny. It just that
I
thing
never
has
even
no
remembered
room for
that it wasn't called Quetzalcoatl in our games. I never even I always just reread it as Quetzalcoatl. I didn't even know it's called Quetzalcoatl. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's been used. And as much as you love Crisis Core, clearly, I don't know if you can have Raijin show because Quetzalcoatl would work so well in this region, whereas Raijin Cho wouldn't. It would work better in the east.
There's the thing that kind of bothers me too, where it's like, I'm surprised Quetzalcoatl has like been nowhere, but they've shown lots of Valgamander, which is what you would think Quetzalcoatl would look like. You know, like in it's like a Quetzalcoatl kind of like a sky dragon snake thing, you know, with wings, which is what Valgamander looks like. But we already have that for the, so it's just it'd be a weird double beat unless maybe it's actually Quetzalcoatl.
It's cool.
It is possible that they're similar or based on the same thing. I mean, we know that in the ancient story had Ifrita, and we have Ifrit in the main in the current timeline, and we've also know that Ramu is somewhat based on which of the 12? Rauga.
Yeah.
So I think it's likely that it is the future version, the future whatever evolution of the Quetzalcoatl from Anida.
So actually, have we ever talked about this? Do they know how to summon primals over there? Is that a thing they do? Or have
we
ever
no
done?
Idea. We know very little about what they do.
The best we can say is that they can go and, well, some of them in the northern part can go and steal enemies' magic.
Mm.
And a dude went over and learnt that. And now we can also say that there's a two-headed Mamuljar in charge who's retiring. That's about as far as our knowledge goes.
They really did not give us a lot to go on in the expansion compared to
others. Well, maybe that's a good thing.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's rare to not go into a Final Fantasy XIV expansion without knowing literally everything that's going to happen.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It's a plus.
I do hope Quetzalcoatl is in the game, though. I don't like his 8 design. It doesn't make me think of the actual Quetzalcoatl.
No, it doesn't.
You know?
It should be a feathered serpent.
I don't care necessarily because Final Fantasy has a historical precedent for not fully representing what gods they've stolen the names of to represent things in their game.
Yeah. You're true, but like a smooth gold bird.
It's just a lump. Yeah, is
it? I like
the smooth gold lump. Thank you very much.
I don't know. Call
it tiny head.
It's just why
little melon.
Why call that Quetzalcoatl?
Because it was. That's just
because that's the name they wanted.
I know.
Look at some of the games you show us, Rollo, of the
games.
Shakespeare's just a random little girl. So what? The Japanese just do what they want to do.
Yeah. Right. Fate Stay Night. I don't play that.
I mean, when you look at the art now.
Valgamander,
the original art
like
for it, I mean, it is pretty cool. It's just not well represented in, you know, 8's engine.
It has like the vaguest parts. It's more supposed to be a serpent.
Yeah.
But the feathers are kind of there. It clearly has wings. It's not great.
No.
But it's iconic.
Yeah, I just, you know, I feel like other designs kind of harp on their, or play off, or, you know, their original interpretation. It's just like a little bit better, you know?
How does Shiva represent
Shiva
the original
is definitely
representation
not doing
of Shiva?
That.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes they go further, but it's I feel like Quetzalcoatl is just a little bit lamer in my eyes.
Okay.
Quetzalcoatl
That's
needs.
Fair.
We need a Quetzalcoatl redemption. We need. We need a better model for that one.
Big snake bird with big feathery wings.
Yeah.
So make him Valgamander, basically.
Yeah. Yes. Change the name. You can do it. Still time. Okay. Maybe that's the Turali name for it.
Maybe.
We won't know. All right. Let's move on. We have this interview from Backstage Investigators. So buckle up, bucko, because we are going in here. Okay, so this is with a background concept artist, Mariko Higashi. I wish I had this picture available. I tried to put it in the our thing there, but for some reason these pictures wouldn't load. But so I'll do the Yoshi P thing and show you like this, but here she is.
You can see
the,
so cool.
The glare of OBS in the in there, but okay. Well, something funny about this picture, she has like two computers. So with that comes two keyboards and two mice. This looks very stressful to me, but I guess one of them
my
is...
My favorite?
Yeah, go on.
I think my favorite part is neither of the mice are on the mouse pad.
That's her tablet.
Oh, is that a tablet?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell because it's blank right now.
It's a bigger crime,
actually.
That's
the Wacom Bamboo 13.
She simply doesn't have a mouse mat. She is one of the ones that just do it on the table, which is a
That mouse is raw-dogging the table. What the hell?
Rona, when you're doing concept art, you don't need mice where you're going.
She might just use her tablet mostly. You can use that as a mouse.
Probably.
Two gamer mouse.
What's mice. This?
Yeah.
Oh, is that just a coffee cup next to it? Because it's in the same aesthetic as her, like, everything else. So I was like, very high-tech. I wonder what it is.
Yeah.
She gets her mice and clean them.
Unfortunately, that also means I can't really show you the artwork, but they show some of the stuff she's worked on, like this, which...
That's the honey hive, the honeybee?
It was just called the hive in this, wasn't it? Don't worry, I'm very descriptive images.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the
most of these...
The first one is a pink strip club.
Well, I
the
can...
The second one is Radzat Han. Go and show it to Kale.
Oh, okay.
The third one
we're gonna go through
is
all of
Pandemonium,
them.
Looking very.
Well,
grim.
Mela, you're gonna have to.
Oh, sorry.
Give me, okay, so there's
it's
this
Radzat Han, and you can see the river Rads running around it,
and the river.
And there's the
Han.
River Han.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they meet in the middle at Radzat Han.
Yeah.
That's why it's called that, you know.
Yeah.
Probably. And then the next one is Pandemonium, the gates of Pandemonium.
Yeah.
And it's the main color choice here is black because it's evil.
It looks very cool. In fact, I think I prefer the concept art to what it ended up looking like.
Oh, 100%. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Concept art in almost all cases looks better than the final product.
People will always be like, I want what I can't have or it's not in the game.
And
you know?
This last one is that new mountain region where the giants and the little people live. And it has the rainbow hills in the background and a big mountain where the giants probably live. I can't remember what it was called.
The rainbow hills are so smooth.
Oh my god.
They are like so textureless.
Smooth. Yeah.
It's like
I
yogurt.
I think they're made of sand. I think it's like colored sand.
Probably.
That would be cool.
Kinetic sand?
Yeah, it's kinetic sand.
Yeah.
So that's the work, that some of the work that she's been doing. So a lot of the concept art. Okay. Miss Higashi, could you tell us how and when you joined the 14 development team? She says, I joined the team in 2018, back when Shadowbringers was being developed. My previous job was also at a game company, and I worked on several titles, including simulation and monster taming role-playing games. But, monster taming role-playing games.
I was trying to say Pokemon?
Yeah.
But you can't say
not
Pokemon.
Allowed to say what?
Digimon? Feel like I don't know. Be able
Temtem,
to say Pokemon.
Unfortunately.
But I wanted to, maybe she's saying that because she actually worked on Digimon, but she wants us to think of Pokemon.
Yeah. She wants me to think she's cool, not lame.
But I wanted to try working at a company with their own intellectual properties and move to Square Enix.
Hang on, what does that mean?
Okay. How
it
is
means
that,
that
related?
Probably, she probably worked at a company that contracted out like a mobile gaming company that made... It's like how Pokemon contracts out all its mobile games rather than makes them internally.
I see.
way she says, like, I used to work at some like Pokemon like hack company, and we did a Pokemon and I did all the concept art for that.
So you had prior experience with working on games of various genres. What are some of the most memorable backgrounds you've worked on for 14? I'm especially fond of Labyrinthos, the first area I ever designed. So there is
some concept of Labyrinthos. The main color scheme is blue and green.
I mean, Mela, you are doing this as a joke, but we do have audio listeners that you should actually do this every time.
Yeah,
One thing I've never
noticed about the Labyrinthos concept art is there's actual greenery on like the platforms to the left, like above the settlement, rather than just being like pure concrete.
Which
is what it is in game.
Yeah.
Again, the concept art looks so enjoyable and lush and nice. And unfortunately, I mean, Labyrinthos looks cool, but it's a lot more gray in the game.
Yeah.
Okay. I just have to tell you something funny. I looked up Mariko Higashi. That was the name, right?
Yeah. I think
on Moby Games, could not find whatever they worked on before, whatever Monster Tamer. It just says Final Fantasy 16, Endwalker, Shadowbringers, and Stormblood as a background concept artist. And then in 2008, The Wizard of Oz, Beyond the Yellow Brick Road, Nintendo DS.
Nice.
Nothing in between that. That's the Monster Taming game, I guess.
Okay, wow, that's...
Maybe, yeah, you got to tame the lion. At least no heart.
According to Moby Games, which is not always accurate, so don't take that.
I suspect it isn't.
It can't, because it said Stormblood when she said she started working in Shadowbringers. So, yeah, it might not be fully
up to date.
That's
funny, though. Good, you know what? If you can find any of the Wizard of Oz concept art,
you can tame the Tin Man.
The monkeys?
Tin Man.
The monkeys?
Were there flying monkeys?
Oh yeah, the flying monkeys. Yeah,
and the witch.
I love when you say things as if Rollo is. There's no way Rollo can say something true.
I can't remember.
It's just like the bedknobs and broomstick things, where you're like, no, the Nazis didn't say
genuinely blocked that out. Like, had no idea.
Because I just remember the bed flying around and the magic.
Yeah.
I remember the horrible war story.
No.
I will say, though, I think it's kind of funny. It's like the same thing with Soken and like with how she worked on the DS game. He worked on Mario.
Was it 3-3?
Yeah.
The DS is pumping out fucking Square Enix people. I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah. With Labyrinthos, we added high-tech machinery to Old Charlian's imagery of Greek architecture and conch shells. While these conflicting visuals were an intriguing combination, a poor integration would just look out of place. So I spent many painstaking hours getting the balance just right. Out of everything in Labyrinthos, I'm especially fond of Thaumazane's shell-like roof and the bizarrely cute roundness of the cisterns.
I see what she means. I'd never really thought about it. I always thought they looked weird.
Yeah.
Cute roundness.
Yeah, the cute roundness.
She sent a screenshot of Thaumazane in-game.
Yeah.
And you can compare that to the concept art and see that she's done quite a good job of the devs translating that.
Yeah.
Because that's the grayest part of Labyrinthos, so it's easy to go from gray concept art to gray in-game.
Yes.
It's the greenery that they struggled with.
Yeah, well, which we know
because... And then
there's
a picture of the cute cisterns, which...
They have cute roundness. The cute roundness is stunning.
Like mushrooms, I guess.
It's interesting because you say that the greenery is what they struggle with. That is legit what they were struggling with because the engine can't do it. So that's what we're getting the new expansion.
Dawn Trail.
I was also in charge of backgrounds for the copied factory and the puppet's bunker of Yorha Dark Apocalypse. As a big fan of the Nier series, I was absolutely thrilled when I was assigned to the crossover. I enjoy imagining the internal structure or mechanisms or how they might move, so I had a lot of fun designing Hobbs, the second boss in the copied factory. since its mechanics involve the chamber's walls. We background concept artists had the rare opportunity of designing both a boss and its arena, which was a gratifying experience.
That's cool. Again, it's just that is concept art of Hobbs himself,
yep.
Which was the enemy that was a bit like GLaDOS from Portal, if you can't remember.
Hobbs is... I still think Hobbs is one of the best designed bosses of the,
this is a cool
the Near Raid series.
I agree. I think it was the most well-designed one. Yeah. Generally. It had some interest. And each alliance got slightly different mechanics to do, which was fun. So it meant each time you did a rerun, it was good.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the concept art has like a...
Oh.
Like the background outside the arena still drawn up.
Yeah, it does. Which is interesting. Which is very fun.
Main colors are gray and orange.
Okay. I did actually find out now. Digimon Cyber Sleuth.
It was Digimon! So
it was.
Yeah.
Pokemon, I
did she, it. And Wild Arms, too, apparently, and some other. It's so.
Wild Arms?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no. Not Wild Arms, but Digimon.
Okay.
Same company that made Wild Arms, though.
Right.
Oh, okay, then. Well, that's different, because I was going to say Wild Arms is much older than Digimon, isn't it?
Yeah. The Hobbs encounter the Hobbs encounter definitely feels like you're fighting the entire arena. I'm surprised that you designed both in tandem. I'm also Japanese style interview, clearly, because they have to give that little feedback. I'm also a big fan of the fairy tale look of Limeg and the mural in the Loperit tribe quest. Do you have any stories about those? She says we were directed to make Limeg a picture-perfect location, so we set out to create a charming area where you can't help but take screenshots. Back then, I had a toddler at home who was just as mischievous as the pixies, so the toys we played with together inspired me to add slides and the other playground equipment. I also had a sweet tooth, so I went all out with adding sweets. The final design was simply brimming with hope, and I'm very grateful to my... Yeah, I chose not to read that, but she did laugh. She probably laughs like this. The final design was simply brimming with hope, and I'm very grateful to my team for helping me make it happen.
Limeg is one of the best design locations in the game, and it's a shame that you don't have very much reason to go there. What were you going to say, sorry, Mila?
I would say, unfortunately, they've put a screenshot of Limeg. Not the I really want to see her concept art if she has any of that, because it's such a colorful zone.
Yeah, we don't get any more concept art.
Unfortunately, this game... only sometimes does colors well.
Yeah. It gets...
Limeg is an example where it is done well.
I think it's done pretty well in Limeg.
Yeah.
They had a good go. But like when thinking of a place like Paggulthan Dungeon, when you got to the Field of Gold, it was so vibrant. And that last planet in Dead Ends.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Okay. For the mural, we were told that some of the Loperits were great artists, while others were not as talented. So the other artists and I drew together to depict that variance. Each and every sketch captured that crude but pretty look, and I remember being impressed that we all could draw in so many different styles. In the end, I compiled all of their ideas and drew the final illustration. My favorite part is the Loperit who loves carrots so much that they drew themselves with carrots for ears and arms.
It's disgusting.
She laughed.
It's the mural from the Loperit. It just looks like any street in London.
No, I don't remember any street art looking this good in London, Mela.
No.
They fucking wish.
I wonder, they could have, they didn't do this because she didn't say this, but it would have been interesting if they asked some of the people in the dev team that cannot draw to contribute to this.
If you look in the bottom right of the mural, you'll see they did.
Yeah, there is a little crudely drawn.
The pudding.
It's a little yellow bit under the giant carrot. There's like a scroll over it.
Yeah. You've worked on backgrounds of various different genres, but is there anything that you could keep in mind when designing them? She says it's crucial to discuss with the other developers who will be working on the scenario or backgrounds before we start designing. It obviously helps ensure that our ideas don't clash with the setting, but talking with them can also give us new ideas, even solidify details that were still undecided. I see, says the interviewer. So the artist's active participation in the world-building aspects helps to create convincing designs. I've been told you were also in charge of Island Sanctuary's backgrounds. Do you have any stories from behind the scenes or anything you'd like our players to look out for? She says the structures of Island Sanctuary are built from resources found throughout the island, so most of them have conventional designs. On the other hand, the water otter fountain was one of the structures I intended to be more eye-catching. Picture of the otter fountain,
just a screenshot.
Yeah. When I was brainstorming structures, I happened to be reading The Namasu and the Greatest Gift. The picture book was so adorable that I ended up designing several structures based on its characters and ultimately chose the otter to be the motif. There you go. I never would have guessed...
That's cool.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that the fountain was based on the picture book. How do you come up with detailed designs for buildings or small objects? She says, in the case of Island Sanctuary, my ideas came from taking my toddler to the beach or the park. For example, water-based playgrounds are easier to enjoy with shorter structures, or having a swing here might be fun. Island Sanctuary involves living in the island environment, so I tried my best to make the designs as compelling as possible. There's a
picture of an Island Sanctuary. Everyone's having a gay old time.
Yeah.
They're chatting. They're reading books. There's a woman on a mandragora.
Yeah.
It's just a brilliant time on the island.
Yeah.
It's a fully decorated like base area for the Island Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've gone above and beyond what can be reasonably expected of a player.
There's a lot of people visiting one island, too.
Yeah.
It's an unrealistic scenario.
I've always been fond of interior design as well, so when I'm designing furnishings, I try to imagine how someone might navigate the various rooms. In my head, I'd think, there's an entrance with a rug, a coffee table on the side for placing various items, a sofa to relax on, and some drinks. Ah, oh, bliss. She laughs. I see. So your designs are inspired by both your real-life experiences and imagination. The upcoming expansion, Dawn Trail, will include a graphical update. I'm sure it's still in development, but how do you feel about this upcoming change, and how would it affect your designs? She says, my workload has started to calm down a bit, so I went for a stroll in the world of 14 as it's being updated. First of all, I was really impressed by how even more gorgeous the world could be with the higher resolution textures. Buildings and settlements were decorated with more props, too. Seeing those everyday objects reminds me of the people who go about their daily lives in those places and really enhances my immersion. The update is sure to bring the world of 14 a step closer to its ideal form, and that makes me truly happy.
Well, that's very encouraging.
Yeah.
Because the excitement of seeing a more densely populated world in terms of objects is exciting. It'll feel more like a lot of people's houses. Or at least the better, more cohesively made house.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how it ends up. I think I'm mostly looking forward to material changes. Some of the changes they've made to the materials is so good, like the velvet and the metals.
Yeah. Oh, the gold.
It looks so good.
It's real gold, not piss.
Yeah. Like weird plastic. I imagine we're all eager to adventure in the updated world. Last but not least, do you have anything you'd like to say to our players? She says, thank you all for playing 14. I'll continue creating all sorts of new designs and memorable areas in hopes that you'll have brand new experiences every time you play. Seeing everyone's screenshots is a huge source of motivation and fills my heart with gratitude. Our designs are the work of everyone on the background concept art team, and we'd all love to hear about your favorite locations or anything else you'd like to share. A background concept artist job is designing our players' surroundings. So if you enjoy traveling, gaming, and playing outdoors, and want to help create a new world where you can have all those kinds of experiences, we'd love to work with you.
No.
She laughs. Thank you. That's it.
I'm submitting my application right now. I'd be very good at this job, I'm sure.
Let's go. I would suck.
You guys can vouch for me, right?
Of course.
I mean, I've not seen your artwork.
I have.
You've seen his artwork.
Ryan draws well.
Yeah. We'll send an application, of course. Right, there we go. That's it. Sounds like a nice woman. She's done
with
a lot
of... cool. Maybe they should get her out on the stage one day so she can... We can see if that really is how she
Very maps. Important. Yeah. That's true. That's important. But it's also, this is a very important job. Like, this is the world.
This is an unsung hero.
Yeah.
For sure. This is one of the background people who does actually real in, you know, important work.
Yeah.
I always like to hear from the artist on the team too. And not like just the usual like character designer, concept art. Like I like hearing the kind of like the weird, like the material designer, the set guy or whatever, you know, the prop designer.
Yeah.
Even like sometimes they give incredibly dry but interesting presentations. So it can be hard to watch, but, or at least it can be hard to try and present in a good way.
I still think the gear designers panel from 2 fan fests ago now, I think the one for the Shadowbringer fan fest in Europe was one of the better panels that we've ever seen. And she was like one of the artists on the team.
I
even like Mr. Osmus one, but it was just hard to actually present as an interesting thing to.
Is that the one where we decided to not cover that again? Is that okay?
Yeah,
Mr. Osmus was the one deep into spreadsheets.
Where you started opening spreadsheets, I'm like, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
But Mr. Osmus was the one
Japanese
that convinced us. Yeah, it was his was the one that convinced you not to cover the gear designers, which was actually which would have actually been interesting and fun to cover, probably.
Yeah,
they're very hit and miss as to what's actually presentable, but they're all interesting. They're just different topics.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Mariko Higashi.
Thank you. Thank you. Miss.
Thank you for the Wizard of Oz game. My childhood.
Send us your Wizard of Oz concept art.
Yeah. I always think about the fact that they used asbestos for the snow.
I think it's fine because I think you don't understand. But then people had stronger lungs, so
that
fine.
Production was so cursed. I just can't stop thinking every time I hear Wizard of Oz. Like, Dorothy great movie, but Dorothy was chain smoking backstage. She was forced to, and then they threw asbestos, shaved asbestos, as them.
She loved
them.
It. I saw the slippers. They got restored near me, and I saw.
Really?
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's cool.
They are just sequenced slippers too.
But they are like. Some of the most iconic, one of the most iconic props in history.
It was a Kickstarter to get it restored, too.
Really? I thought there'd be more of... Okay.
I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
It was really interesting.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, that's it for today, folks. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Remember to follow on Twitter at SpeakersXIV, twitch.tv/SpeakersOfHighland, youtube.com/SpeakersXIV, /Discord in the chat if you want to join our Discord server. If you're watching on demand, links in the description. If you're watching live, we're about to go into the post show where we will be reading questions from the Syndicate and... God damn it, Pokemon. We'll see you there.
Yay!
Bye.
Yay.
You've just listened to an episode of Speakers of Eidolon, produced by Speakers Network. Producer for this episode was Lukeel Bravestone. Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy XIV is a registered trademark of Square Enix Holding Company Limited. If you would like to support the show, consider pledging to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/speakersxiv or buy some merch at teespring.com/stores/speakersxiv. Link to both of these sites, as well as our Discord server, is provided in the episode description. Thank you for listening to this Speakers Network production.